the premiere of the streaming Cyboctacular was a smash hit!
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
The reviews are in. The friends of DeSoto. They love this live show.
And this thing is going to be available to stream until midnight on May 30th. That's the rest of the month, so get a ticket and watch it tonight, why don't you?
There's exclusive merch at this show that we didn't have available on tour.
And if you already support us on MaximumFun.org, you'll get a discount for your ticket. Check your email for a promo code.
The ticket link is at greatestgentour.com. Go check out the show, watch it with someone you love, and share your embarrassment with them.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, broadcasting live from Norfolk, Virginia, I think.
Have you been given instructions on how to pronounce the name of that city?
I think the FCC would frown on me pronouncing it the way I want to.
I did a little bit of growing up outside of Norfolk.
Did you really?
In Virginia Beach is where I spent some time up until the fourth grade. My family lived there.
I thought you lived in California until the fourth grade. I don't know why I thought that.
Well, I was born in California and then almost immediately moved to Virginia Beach.
Wow.
And then around the fourth grade, we moved to Seattle.
Hmm.
Yeah, just crisscrossing these great United States.
Yeah.
And what I remember, though, from that time, very specifically, is Norfolk.
Norfolk.
Which sounds a little Boston-y, I feel like.
Yeah, well, there's a Suffolk in Boston.
I can't wait to see you explain this to a fucking Suffolk County jury, you fucking cocksucker. This is going to be fucking fun.
Yeah, it sounds Suffolk-y.
It sounds fucking Suffolk.
Fucking Suffolk.
And there's a Suffolk here. I just spent an entire day in Suffolk.
What are you doing in Suffolk?
Well, I have an NDA, so I don't... I can't reveal much, but I was.
You won't be able to reveal it until a future Jordan Jesse Go episode.
I was actually specifically admonished not to call this one into Jordan Jesse Go because the folks that hired me are fans of the show.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, I got this call that it was like, hey, can you be in Virginia like the day after tomorrow? And I was like, maybe. And I like, I don't know. It worked out that I could do it. And the lady I talked to, who's a listener to The Greatest Generation and also Jordan Jesse Go, said like, oh, I want you to talk to like the founder of the production company. It's just very unusual for us to send somebody on a job that he doesn't know personally. So he just wants to talk to you and get to know you. And by the way, he loves dick jokes. So just feel free to pepper those into the conversation. It's the first time I've ever been like sent into what is essentially a job interview and told, lay the dick jokes on him. And this is actually, without going into too much detail, a company that I believe has reached out to you for jobs in the past, and you were like way too busy with your big time production lifestyle.
Well, I'm glad you could catch my leavings, Ben, because I tell you what, it's far easier for you to go to Norfolk than me to go to Norfolk.
Yeah. These waning days of it being easy for me to go to Norfolk.
How much longer are you in Virginia?
I'm just down here for two nights. It was fly down, wake up in the crack of dawn, shoot all day, sleep one more night and fly back in the morning type of job. So
without breaking your NDA, successful shoot? You make your day?
Yeah. I made my day. It's one of those things where you like send the footage off and then you just have to like hope it seems good to the other people. You know?
Oh man, so this is a white glove job. I love a white glove job.
I think it was. I mean, I was pleased with how it looked in the camera, but you know, I'm sure you're familiar with this, that sometimes you get something in camera and you think like, God, that's going to be great. And then you get into the edit and you're like, damn it, I suck.
It often works out differently from what you expect in both directions. Like yeah. Often something looks great in the camera and you get it up on a monitor and you're like, eh, but you know, in the other way, like sometimes you'll shoot something in the cam just for coverage and it ends up being your favorite shot in the edit. So
yeah,
funny how that works.
Well, Adam, things work out very strangely in this episode we came here to review. Why don't we do that thing now?
That's one of the all-time great pivots to show, Ben. I think when TNG wraps up for us and they do like the clip show where they go over the highlights of our podcast.
Who's they? You're just talking about, you're making more work for us right now.
No, I think what I'm proposing is that someone else makes a podcast about our podcast. And I don't think that should be us.
Too much work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too tired, Adam. I'm so tired.
Let's just go to sleep for between 2 and 3 weeks after our series finale and then start over after that.
Adam, I'm a try-hard only child. I can't allow that.
All right, I want to talk about one of my favorite episodes of the series, Ben. It's season 7, episode 19, Genesis.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Adam, Riker fucked somebody in a cactus patch.
Ben, I think my primary question in this open is there a separate, like, sex arboretum that only Riker knows about? Because the only arboretum we've seen is, like, a koi pond and a couple of ferns.
This is that thing we discussed in that episode that largely took place in the arboretum with the children. It's like when Keiko was on the ship, the arboretum seemed like a bigger place.
Yeah.
And then everything died. He was in the desert portion of the arboretum with the fetching new tactical officer, he says. The other question I had is, does Six Bay not have any private examination rooms?
Oh, like, that's a great call. Where's the screen?
If I was Riker, I wouldn't want to be in here in public for like Riker is the fucking first officer and he's got to sit there getting a sex wound treated while Barclay is in there telling everybody about what he found on WebMD.
Well, here's the thing. If everyone in Six Bay was behind some partitioned screens, you would fail to get the frenetic directorial pace that Gates McFadden is giving this scene. It is straight up like cold open in ER style. Like the ER is flooded with patients. Dr. Crusher is triaging everyone, and the camera is just bounding from place to place.
It's a really lively scene, and it's very cool that this is Gates McFadden's directorial debut and finale on this show. But like you know, she takes kind of a back seat as a character in this episode, but she is front and center in the most complicated sequence of the ep.
I mean, we've talked about cast members directing for the first time, and I think in most cases, they choose to have their characters not be fully present or present at all in the episode. And occasionally, they won't be very flashy, but holy shit, Gates McFadden moving the camera around everywhere. A lot of foreground, background complexity, like a lot of strange and different compositions that we haven't seen before. Like she definitely has an idea for most scenes and she goes for it every time. I was blown away.
Yeah. A+ Gates McFadden. It feels really different. It feels like a fun new way to tell a Star Trek story.
She does a thing fairly often in this episode where people move toward the camera and away from it in a way that I'm not used to seeing before. Most of the time, the camera moves with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the screen is just positively filled with people, too. Like, there are some episodes, like the last episode, where it doesn't seem like anyone else is on the ship besides the senior staff.
Yeah.
But tons of extras throughout.
It's like a Kurosawa scene. Like, the way she composes the frame with people. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of things going on in Six Bay. Riker got into a little roll in the hay, and the hay was a cactus. Barkley...
That hay fucks back.
Barkley's doing some real, like, hypochondriac shit where he, you know, got some bad information out of the computer about how he has Torellian death syndrome, which will go down in history as the dumbest Star Trek disease name of all time.
Is it of or related to the Torellians from season one who had that ship that...
Oh, were those Torellians?
I think that's what that alien was called, Torellians.
Wow.
And they were quarantined. Like, is the death syndrome what they had?
They're quarantined for a disease that appeared to just make them kind of dewy.
Their disease involves the midriff.
Yeah. You know, Crusher is like, you don't have that. You have something else. Here's a little something for it. And Data walks in with Spot.
I hate cats.
Data's cat.
Spot.
I love cats.
And Spot is fat with kittens. She's going to be a cat mama in the next few days. And then Nurse Ogawa admits that she is going to be a new mama herself in the next few months.
Things moved kind of fast with her and her boyfriend.
Yeah. When did they get together? Beginning of this season?
I feel like it was only a few episodes ago she was like, I don't think he likes me anymore.
Yeah.
He's working a lot. Weird. Beverly is totally fucking pumped. Like, Beverly's more excited than Ogawa.
Ogawa plays these things pretty close to the vest, I feel like. I think this is also the first episode where we see Troy holding down a shift on the bridge. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like season 7. Like, other episodes also happened.
It's maybe the most self-aware season of all of them.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, anyways, this all goes down, and we push to title sequence. And when we come back, the entrepreneur is pulling up to a field of asteroids, and they are going to use these asteroids in the way that hillbillies use cans on picket fences for target practice. I guess the idea is that they've upgraded all of their weapon systems, and Worf is like really chest out, like,
I have enhanced the targeting system for increased accuracy.
This is going to be a lot of fun, guys. And they start shooting, and 1, 2, 3 torpedoes get let loose, and 2 of them connect, and 1 of them just kind of like veers off course and is off on a wild goose chase. And Picard's like, well, we got to get that thing back. We can't just let that thing fly around. And Picard and Data are going to go on a road trip and hunt down this torpedo in a Previa.
Was that the torpedo that was filled with snakes?
I wouldn't have kept that.
Where did the snakes go? Like, are these like scrubbing the scorch marks out of engineering?
Did they have to put the ship back together in that episode? Like, a lot of it got turned into other things, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I think at the end of Masks, it all went away magically. But I don't know if, like, if a fire was in engineering, the fire goes away, but I don't think the scorch marks do.
But does the terracotta totem that shows up in Troy's room that's made out of matter from the rest of the ship, does it go away and like that matter goes back to where it was? Because if so, I mean, those snakes like turn back into warhead, right?
It's so clear that the canonical masks-averse on this show, we're filled with questions about it.
I mean, we could do an entire podcast episode about it.
About the episode Masks? Yeah, we probably could.
Yeah, that's my thinking. Anyways. So Worf is fucking pissed, and he goes down to 10 forward. I kind of got the sense that he was also pissed that Data left the ship and left Spot in Lieutenant Barclay's hands. That used to be Worf's job, you know?
I wouldn't trust Barclay with a goldfish.
I know.
He seems like a terrible house sitter, a terrible pet sitter.
Worf's not going to be psyched about looking after Spot, but he knows how to do it.
I think everyone's getting a turn with Spot is the thing.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, like, when we go out of town and we have to, like, leave our dog, we do try to rotate him through the friends so nobody is getting disproportionately stuck with the duty, you know, both literally and figuratively. Worf is down in Six Bay, and he's stress eating. He's just replicated everything and is eating all of it. And he's sitting there, and Troy comes in, and she's like, "Hey, like, thanks for waiting for me. Aren't we supposed to be on a date?" And they're just both acting super weird at him.
Worf has replicated a bunch of those Disneyland turkey legs with a side of octopus. Two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah, he's literally replicated all the things. It's real nasty.
Yeah, he's a messy eater, for sure. And Troy sidles up to him, and she's like downing her thermos of water.
I wonder if the environmental controls are set properly.
And it's like, I cannot believe how thirsty I am right now. And also, I would like to eat caviar. Do we have any of that caviar that we spread all over our turkey? I'd like to get some of that.
Yeah.
And then she starts going to town on a cup of caviar, like with a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, is that how you eat caviar? Like, just you just spoon it in?
I'm
asking because I've never had it before.
I've never had beluga caviar. I've had like cheap, plain old caviar. Yeah, I think you put a little bit on a cracker. That's kind of a nice way to eat it. I don't know. I feel like a beluga caviar maybe is too fancy to put on a cracker, but I wouldn't know.
Troy forgoes the cracker though.
Yeah, she's eating it like she eats chocolate.
A little gross. Like, gross in her own way is how she's eating. They're both eating grossly.
And so, like, the deal is the gang is in a bad way, and they're, like, acting increasingly weird, and, like, nobody is noticing it until, like, a bunch of shit, like, hits the Six Bay all at once. And it's like, you know, some people think it's too hot, other people think it's too cold. Worf is in there, and he's got like new loaf on the side of his neck, and Crusher's like,
"What is this?"
And he opens his mouth and sprays venom all over her face.
This whole scene is so disgusting. The makeup work on the venom sack is awesome. It's so gross looking. It looks tender and painful.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it, but like this whole scene just makes me cringe.
I saw an old man in the supermarket with one of those a couple of weeks ago.
did he spray you in the face?
No, I just made sure not to buy anything in the vegetable section that he had like gone through. It's really like testing out all the avocados, and I was like, no avocados for me, thanks.
Dr. Crusher goes down like the girl in the Canadian PSA talking about kitchen safety.
I should have cleaned up the grease over there.
It's one of the most terrifying images in the whole series, I want to say. Like, it's very upsetting. Like, it just comes out of left field, and it is so freaky deaky how she reacts to it.
There's a scene before this where they're having some issues in a Jeffries tube that Barkley and Geordi investigate, and there's an Aliens style acid hole in it.
Yeah.
And when you see Worf spray his acid in this scene, you put together that Worf, I guess, has been cruising around the ship spitting acid at stuff. Like,
why that, there in particular, like, Worf?
I guess this happens after he gets up out of bed. Like, he has a night terror, and he rips the stuffing out of his bed and makes, like, a stuffing nest on the floor. He's not sleeping great.
No.
I guess he sleeps so poorly he gets up and sprays acid around the ship. It's so weird that they have no security cameras in any Jeffries tubes, though.
Yeah, why didn't they just watch the earlier part of the episode that showed Worf going on a little Jeffries tube sojourn to spray acid at things?
Tell you what, man, you see an acid hole in a Jeffries tube, really makes you think about what an Aliens TNG crossover would be like.
Fucking A.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's also just like a lot of fun stuff for the different characters to do. Like, I love that Riker gets dumber and dumber. Barkley gets like more and more like manic because he's getting increasingly spidery. And like, you know, there's a great like, you know, Troy wanting to turn up the heat and humidity and Worf wanting to turn it down, which is a classic workplace dispute, you know?
There's a thing about Jonathan Frakes' face that, like, he can look so charismatic and great, but if he just slacks his jaw a little bit and, like, stares off in the middle distance, yeah, he looks so dumb.
He looks the dumbest.
He's got so much intelligence range, you know?
Yeah, he's got, like, 4 octaves of intelligence range.
He's the Mariah Carey of intelligence. There's a lot of like fine detail, like for as broad as some characters get to play this, there's also some like fine detail work. Like Ogawa acts very subtly primate-like, like in her little saunter walk out of the McLaughlin group she's
issue
in.
One.
Yeah. Like,
Geordi is in a ton of scenes early on in this episode and then he just disappears.
Total bullshit, man. It's just bullshit.
I wonder what he turns into.
Yeah, I wondered if they just ran out of loaf budget, because there is a lot of special loaf in this ep.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it's cheap to redesign as many characters as they did. So this is all like all going to shit, and Picard and Data show back up in their shuttle, and they're like flying around. They're like, wow, the entrepreneur is not where we expected to find it. Oh, but it's over here, and it's like upside down.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Now, you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
I really love this time jump. The jump in time, the jump in perspective.
Yeah.
The listing Enterprise looks so creepy.
The Enterprise appears to be adrift.
It's something I wonder about all the time. Like, why are all ships, like, clearly observing the same vertical in the galaxy when that's not...
I wish you hadn't said that, Ben.
What?
You're going to get, like, 400 emails now.
What?
Captain, we're receiving 285,000 hails.
No, I don't know why either. I'm just saying that 400 people are going to email you with their theory.
Well, their theories are ridiculous. They shouldn't be. Yeah. They shouldn't be doing that. But like, one of the reasons I think is that the ship looks so weird from a weird angle like this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. They're made to be looked at from a certain angle.
I mean, I think that the film that we just toured had a lot of fun with turning your local vertical upside down when Picard and Worf and Captain Redshirt walked across the bottom of the saucer section. But yeah, it like makes no sense. It's only justifiable from a creative standpoint because we are used to having there be a right way up.
Really cool scene here where they sort of like they tell the shuttle computer to match the telemetry of the listing Enterprise and just sort of guide it in.
You know, don't just ram it in there like that.
And they arrive in the shuttle bay, and the shuttle bay is all dark and kicked. Things are looking like a haunted house in there.
Yeah.
Like they're on reserve power. They're hearing animal noises.
There's crap all over the floors.
Yeah.
Spider webs everywhere. It's a mess. And it's just kind of a mystery. Like they have no information about what's going on. And I think that's the scariest thing is like they don't know if the ship got taken over or if somebody attacked them or if everybody was abducted, but they know that there's a lot of animals around.
They agree to hoof it up to the bridge where they find the guy at the helm just totally vivisected, basically. Like,
looks as though he's been attacked by an animal.
He has died in about as gory a way as possible on syndicated television.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like he's been attacked by a bear.
Like, you couldn't actually show this attack because there would be too much blood. You can show the aftermath of it, though.
Like, if Werner Herzog were listening to the attack in some sort of weird captain's log, he would tell everyone that they must never listen to the tape.
Oh, how would that sound, Adam?
Truly, you must never listen to this.
I don't have a Werner in my repertoire, Ben. I think you do, but I don't.
Oh, I have the world's shittiest Werner Herzog.
Just off the bridge, they hear a banging from the ready room that they go and investigate. And there is a Cro-Magnon Riker inside with, like, who has somehow become even more hairy. He's giving them the finger before being phaser blasted, like, twice by Data when he tries to attack Picard on his couch. Normally, Picard's the one doing the attacking on his couch.
Hey, I feel like they really saved Riker's butt here because if Riker had gotten at that super deadly fish, he would be dead.
that fish turned into a jellyfish, though.
Oh, did it?
But maybe it's a very deadly jellyfish. Yeah, Livingston de-evolved also.
Oh shit! I didn't notice that.
Like all the pets de-evolve too.
Jellyfish can be extremely deadly, though.
Especially if it is a prehistoric jellyfish, I imagine.
Yeah. So they go down to Six Bay, and I think that they have worked out basically what's going on by this point, which is that
they're each de-evolving into earlier forms of life on their homeworlds.
Everybody's DNA has, like, things in it that are not expressed genes, but are just kind of like relics of earlier stages of evolution. And for some reason, all of this stuff is starting to get turned on for everybody on the ship, and they're starting to de-evolve into earlier creatures. And so Troy is turning into a frog woman, and Riker obviously is turned into Cro-Magnon. Nurse Ogawa is like on a bio bed as like a cave woman, all covered with hair. She's got kind of like a little bit of Planet of the Apes vibes going on. This might be the most impressive makeup, though.
Who looks the best and who looks the worst, do you think, in the makeup department? I might place Spider Barkley at the bottom.
Oh, really? That really freaked me out.
It's totally freaky, but he clearly looks prosthetic-y.
Yeah.
Worf looks terrifying. Worf from the other side of Six Bay starts banging on the door.
Worf is very scary. He's got like armor plating. He's got like the scariest exoskeleton. And Picard is kind of starting to lose it here. He's like, the effects of this virus that are causing everybody to de-evolve are impacting Picard.
Data's like, sorry, bro, but you're also de-evolving, and you're probably going to end up like a hamster. Picard is so sad to hear that he's going to turn into like a lemur or marmoset. Yeah. Like, ugh, what an indignity. The indignity of all indignities is that.
Yeah. There's nothing less captain-like than a pygmy marmoset. But yeah, so they realize that what Worf wants is to bang Frog Troy, and Frog Troy, they know this because he bit Troy on the face at some point, and that is like a Klingon bone-in ritual. And so they distill some sex pheromones from Troy and put it in a hypo spray, and the idea is that Picard is going to lead Monster Worf away from Six Bay while Data works out how to treat this virus. So he like starts like spraying it in the hallways and is like, you know, trying to divert him, Worf, down one corridor and get on an elevator. But Worf finds him, and it's like there's a great like, you know, just getting the elevator door closed in time suspense scene.
The amount of fear directed at Worf is like dinosaur-like. Like, you can hear him stomping. You can hear him roaring. He is totally monstrous.
Yeah, and that guy had dino damage on the bridge. Like, yeah. It's very Jurassic Park-y.
And they sort of veil him in darkness, too. He's never totally lit, and I think that really works in the favor of the fear.
I wondered if this was the same or a similar costume to the one that we also don't really see that much of in the Darmok episode.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, yeah, they do look similar.
It's that kind of like, there's like, you know, nubs and horns and spikes everywhere. And they're kind of
like some predator protrusions out of the face.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a thought I had, but I don't have any way of researching it. So we'll just
impossible.
We'll just leave that there. Maybe somebody else can tell us if we're right or wrong.
Hey, try to bundle your corrections all in one email if you can. I think that'd be great. It'd really help us process those emails.
I would say that the number one downside of having anybody care about this podcast is that anytime we get anything a little bit wrong, we don't hear about it once. We hear about it a dozen times.
Yeah, that's certainly not something we're used to, Ben, in any part of our lives.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like my marriage at all.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurses the disease.
I thought it was interesting that not only did Picard demonstrate the traits of, you know, like prey traits, right? The hyper-awareness, the fearfulness. Mm-hmm. But it almost felt like he wanted to be prey, right? Like he volunteered for the job to distract Proto-Worf and get him away from Six Bay so Data could do the work. What did you think about that? Because if he was true prey, it seems like he would be too scared to do anything.
Yeah.
Except hide.
Well, I think that that's like he's in that transitional phase. He's like not totally given over to the Cro-Magnon Riker mindset, but is starting to slip toward that. Which I think is a cool like place for a character to be, because it's kind of you get to like play the subtleties of that.
So Picard leads him to the Jeffries tube that we saw early on in the episode, the one with the acid hole in it.
Yeah.
And totally like jumper cables the floor.
Yeah, they took
and electrocutes him.
That bypass that Barclay and Geordi did was like just establishing that there would be a loose cable with electricity coming out so that Worf could be zapped.
This seems profoundly dangerous.
Yeah, how does Picard know Worf isn't going to die?
How does Picard know that the panel is, like, does not conduct electricity?
That's a metal panel, Adam. It should conduct electricity.
It's a great scene. It's super exciting.
Yeah. They just,
it doesn't work, though.
They just should have had like a yoga mat or something, not a panel.
This goose chase allows Data the time to finish the project of the retrovirus.
The like idea behind it is they found the kittens that Spot had in Data's quarters, but they find Spot, and Spot is an iguana with a cat collar. And so they're like, huh, maybe there's something in amniotic fluid that protects babies from this virus. And they discover that Nurse Ogawa's baby is fine despite being in a cave woman. And so they like reverse engineer a retrovirus based on the amniotic fluid. And so like Data just like puts it in the air and it like gets pumped out into the ship and everybody goes back to normal. And they like get to like kind of sum up the episode with like the fun science premise of it. And then Dr. Crusher lays it on Barclay that he's going to have a disease named after him.
How about Barclay's protomorphosis syndrome?
And we get the like laugh line to episode of Troy saying, I better clear my calendar. That's probably the drop we'll use there.
Is there any reason, Ben, that everyone shouldn't have crazy stretch marks from this? like especially Worf, right? Like, Worf has grown three sizes too big. Troy has had gills and now does not. Like, they should be scarred to hell, right? Like, you don't just genetically change someone and then change someone back and then, like, is there something about scarification that can be genetically removed?
Well, they do say that...
Like, I understand you can't just leave everyone totally fucked. Like, I understand that practically, but...
They do get past the fact that the doctor got her face acided off by saying, she's going to need reconstructive surgery, but she'll be fine. So I guess the implication is that everybody will have reconstructive surgery. They will have to schedule 1,012 reconstructive surgeries.
Oh, God. You better hope you're a senior officer, otherwise that wait is going to be long.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just some unlucky schmo up in the starboard nacelle with a bunch of stretchy skin hanging off you.
I mean, if you are not feeling super confident about your looks, W/R/T... acne or otherwise, I think nacelle duty is probably pretty great shift to get.
Yeah, you only have the one other person to look at you there, and if you need to end it all, there's a plasma duct right there.
I know what I have to do.
Yeah, there's a convenient way to go. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I love this episode. Big fan.
Season 7 really has some fun episodes.
It really does.
Season 7, a season which has gotten a lot of shit before we started, has very quietly had really great episodes and really bad ones. And I would rather have a season like this than a season that basically is a constant C+ throughout, you know?
Yeah.
They really go for it.
They really go for it. I love that Gates McFadden directed it. That made it more fun for me to watch. Just overall, I thought it was an episode that knew why it was going to be fun, you know?
I am not just happy that Gates got her shot. I'm really thrilled that she was so bold in her choices. Like, a lot of it's very busy and a lot of it is very look at me style direction, but it is an interesting direction on top of an interesting story, and it makes a really great episode that way. This feels like it's mountain worthy to me. It's at least one of the high points in season 7.
I totally agree.
Ben, one of the high points in every episode is the reading of Priority One messages. You want to do that?
Let us do that.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Brian. It is for future Brian, and it goes like this. Remember when the show was halfway over and you decided to send yourself a message? Well, here it is. You finally caught up to the point at which you sent the message. I hope life is going well and you still enjoy watching this show. Ben, Adam, you guys are great. Shout out to the referrers, Jake and Sean. And it says, insert Kevin Uxbridge bit here. In parentheses.
Brian, you know that you can't just insert an Uxbridge wherever you want.
If my presence was something that happened in every episode, people would grow tired of me, and I would go away forever.
Potentially that is what has already happened. Potentially the hosts of this show have lost touch with what is and is not funny.
Between you and me and future you and me, I'm really hoping I get to go along to the Deep Space Nine portion of the program, but I'm really not sure if I'm invited. You ever get invited to a party, and if you don't show up, doesn't really matter. I get that a lot. Dowds are not great party guests, even though I have great appetizers that I love to bring to my friends and relatives.
Even though with a passing thought I could end everything for all of them, I wind up standing in a corner wondering how to strike up a conversation with anybody, trying to come up with conversational premises in my mind and talking them through with myself inside my own head, and then by the time I actually bring something up to somebody, it just seems so overbaked and they just walk away.
I could kill billions of people with a single thought, and yet I cannot take that first step to cross a crowded room to talk to an attractive older lady that looks vaguely like Rashawn.
Adam, our next Priority One message is from...
I was willing to go as far as possible until you ended it.
It's from Sarah, and it is for present day Ivan. Oh, another time traveling one. And this says, Ivan, his arms wide. Sarah, at rest. Ivan, his arms open. Sarah, at rest. Shaka when the walls fell. Ivan, his face black, eyes red, his heart open. Sarah, her eyes open. Ivan and Sarah at Tanagra. Ivan, Sarah, Orbit, and Gwen on the ocean. Let's see. I have extra characters. Please say Exocomp 7 times, or as many times as you can stand. Exocomp, 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 Exocomp. I think that was 7.
Dathan's one of your strongest impressions.
Oh, that's a damning with faint praise, Adam.
Yep.
Well, Adam, if people want to send Priority One messages of their own, they can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And we'd really appreciate them because they help us to afford to make this show.
Not many episodes left, Ben. I think almost the entire end of Next Gen are filled up with ads. So if you were thinking of sneaking one in before the end, get on it.
I would be surprised if the end of Next Gen isn't already sold through by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
But no reason not to jump on the beginning of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, be an early adapter to that train wreck. Hey, Ben?
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I had such a hard time. This is an episode where my Shimoda cup runneth over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's Data, it's Barkley, it's Worf, it's Troy, it's Picard, it's Riker. Like, it's basically everybody but the Doctor.
This episode is so much like The Naked Now, I thought.
It really is. It's like, what if The Naked Now wasn't a turd?
Right. And, like, for that reason, I'm giving my Shimoda to the entire episode. as Shimoda came from the Naked Now episode, so too is this episode like a cousin to that.
It really is.
And it is totally wackadoodle. and the episode itself is having so much fun that, yeah, I mean, to me, the Shimoda is the whole ep.
Yep. I feel the same way. I think we're going to have to call that a daily double.
Yeah, I think so too.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
You know that feeling of putting a ton of work into something only to realize that there was an easier way to do it all along? I had this experience with making the gift wrap on podshop.biz. I took those graphics and I hand-spaced them on a grid and a Photoshop file. And when I finally gave them to our Podshop guy, he was like, "Why did you do it that way?" And then he redid the work that took half a day for me to do in exactly 15 minutes. Websites are almost exactly like this. People have been making websites for a long time, and the best design principles are pretty much known and agreed upon at this point. That's why if you need to make a website, Squarespace is the place to do it. Because Squarespace has the guided design system, the templates, and the professional curation to make your website look its best without the need to figure all that stuff out for yourself. So go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hello, teachers and faculty. This is Janet Varney. I'm here to remind you that listening to my podcast, The JV Club with Janet Varney, is part of the curriculum for the school year. Learning about the teenage years of such guests as Alison Brie, Vicki Peterson, John Hodgman, and so many more is a valuable and enriching experience. One you have no choice but to embrace, because yes, listening is mandatory. The JV Club with Janet Varney is available every Thursday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember, no running in the halls.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPODCASTI.
Were you trying to put the name of the podcast there?
Yeah, I'm trying to spell it, but it's tricky.
Let me give it a try.
Okay.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, call STOPPAD. It'll never fit.
No, it will. Let me try. If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPDCOO. We are so close.
Stop podcasting yourself.
A podcast from MaximumFun.org.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go.
Ben, do we have anything nearly as weird coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 20, Journey's End. Picard is forced to relocate American Indians from a planet they have settled, while a colonist causes Wesley to re-examine his future. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
In the distance, a pan flute player warms up. He's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
I remember this as being the, like, goodbye to Wesley ep.
It is. I remember having kind of complicated feelings about I have very complicated feelings about the way Voyager deals with its Native American character. And I don't remember if this episode is as ham-fisted with that or not. But, this is a series that doesn't traditionally have a great a great take on Native American culture, so it should be at least interesting to review this one.
Oh boy!
If
sounds exciting.
If this episode that we just reviewed is season 7's Naked Now, I hope that the next episode is not season 7's Code of Honor. Just put it that way.
Oy. Oh man, that's quite a lead-in.
Well, Adam, one way we lead out is by telling people to follow us on Twitter. You're on there as at Cut for Time. I'm on there as at Benjamin R A H R. And you can use the hashtag GreatestGen to find all the wisecracks and jokes and memes on there. And if you decide that you don't want to be a part of our social media, you don't need to reach out and tell us about it. That's a dick thing to do. It just makes us feel bad for no reason. It is a total opt-in thing.
Just leave in silence if you're going to leave.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, what the actual fuck? We also have a really wonderful Facebook community, and we have a great Reddit community as well. Those are just rays of sunshine on social networking services that are sometimes not. So go check those out. And
yeah, it's a good place to be.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, and Adam Ragusea, Rags, for our other music. I don't know if you heard. Just
I'm gonna keep calling him the Goose. I did listen to his latest episode of The Pub, where he interviews Jesse Thorne.
Yeah,
we got, I guess you could call it a shout out at the end of that episode.
Yeah, we basically got put on blast for calling him the Goose when also our friend Chris Bowman is the Goose.
I call him Bowflex because that is a nickname that is associated to his last name, and that's the only kind of nickname I like to give. So maybe if Chris Bowman's last name was Goosinger or something, he could be called the Goose. But because it's not, I'm calling Adam Ragusea the Goose.
Man, you,
it's only right.
You and Jesse Thorne should start a Who's a Better Nicknamer Battle podcast. It'll be like Iron Chef, but for giving out nicknames.
The idea that Jesse and I could co-host a podcast is... The idea of that is incredible. I would love that so much. I think I would try his patience almost immediately. The poor guy does not need any more migraines.
He really doesn't.
I am basically a human migraine.
Well, with that, we'll be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is taking some psychoactive cactuses and going into the sweat lodge, I guess.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.